is the Dave Steeren Show on FM News 103.7 KFQD.
Thank you so much, Tobin.
I wish you could all see what just happened in this here.
Yeah, it was awesome. But Brad and I, did you graduate from the University of Oklahoma?
I did not. I went to the University of Tulsa, but our football team was so bad in those days.
I concur.
That we had the opportunity to adopt another team.
You did. Okay.
Another team in the state. And some people adopted OSU,
right.
Oklahoma State, but I adopted OU.
Okay, that's good.
So I can do this. Boomer born, boomer bred. If I die, I'm sooner dead. Raw Oklahoma, Oklahoma, OKU. There you go.
I didn't even know that, and I graduated from the University of Oklahoma. Wow.
For shame.
That is shame.
For shame.
For shame. Now, that's going to be my tattoo I'm going to get. Wrong. Okay, so back in the studio, Rebecca Logan and Renee Reeve from the Alliance, and we're joined by Brad Keithley, frequent guest of the Dave Steeren Show. Right?
Well, used to be.
Used to be. All right.
We're bringing him back.
That's right. We're bringing him back. And we really built you up over the last hour, actually.
I was listening to some of that. Did you write all the questions down? I wasn't.
Renee remembered them.
Oh, okay.
I think she did.
Dan's been here since 71.
Yes. His question was about the Constitution and the Permanent Fund.
Right.
It was more about that. So you have been a longtime proponent of sustainable budget. When did you first start Alaskans for a Sustainable Budget?
So that got started in 2012, I think, maybe 2011, in the run up to the 2012 campaign.
Right.
And you know, that was the time we had $100 oil, we had these huge revenues.
Oh my gosh! And why would we have a sustainable budget?
And so the pushback I got at that point was, it's always going to be above 100. Don't worry about this. We'll get to this someday. We'll get to this someday. I remember one meeting that I had down in Juneau, and I did this great, and I did the presentation. Everybody was nodding their head, and then I went in to the person who had chaired the meeting afterwards, and he said, "Yeah, we'll phase that in over the next 10 years or so." I'm going, "We don't have 10 years."
That's not what I was going for.
No.
Yes, but all right. So now you've, I think, sustainable budget is a household word now. I really do. And people use it in very different ways, right? But I think that people accept the idea of a sustainable budget.
Well, let's give credit where credit's due. It's Scott Goldsmith's original concept, right?
Okay. I thought you were going to say it's ours, but it's not actually ours. Okay, it's Scott Goldsmith.
Scott Goldsmith started writing these papers, well, a long time ago. But,
right.
But in 2010, he started writing again, warning about, you know, that we were overspending, mm-hmm. that we were spending beyond our means. We were essentially stealing from the future. The papers are really entitled Maximum Sustainable Yield.
Right.
What's the maximum
right.
sustainable yield off of our assets that we should be spending? And that turned into sustainable budgets. But it's his original concept.
Yeah. In fact, I had just pointed that out to the staff because we were doing some stuff for Meet Alaska, and I was looking for some of his previous, like earlier mm-hmm. ones, and I was like, it's really called Maximum Sustainable Yield. It's not sustainable budgets. But it's a very important concept, and I do think a lot of people have bought into that concept that we need to have a sustainable budget, but the devil's in the details, right? That's where everything is so different. So you've been doing a lot of good work on the permanent fund.
Well,
did you hear Renee earlier when she was like, he won me over?
I converted her, yeah.
I know you converted.
Yeah.
That's right. She said you
converted. I was prepared
her.
To be skeptical.
And she...
Well, you were skeptical. You weren't only prepared to be skeptical.
Right.
You were skeptical.
But I've told people to go to the website and look at your presentation. This is dinner party conversation, which shows how lame my dinner parties can be.
You said that, not us. Okay. Yes, we've actually posted on our website because it's very... It's very, very good information, the concept of the 50-50 plan originally put forth by Jay Hammond. So why don't you just talk about that a little bit?
So when Hammond was sort of collecting his what became his final thoughts, he was putting together a book called Diapering the Devil. And really that book, it's a fairly thin book. You can read it 2.5 hours, 3 hours. That book really is, I've read all of Hammond's stuff, that book really captures the best what Jay thought about fiscal policy. It sort of weaves in and out throughout the entire book. And in that book, he captured what the intent was behind the permanent fund and what his vision was behind the permanent fund. And it was very simple. About page 15 of the book, he says, I wanted to transform oil wells pumping oil for a finite period into money wells pumping money for infinity. And that's the concept behind the permanent fund, right? We take a portion of the revenues out of oil wells, out of our oil revenue, we stick them into the permanent fund, create money wells, create investments that produce earnings, as Jay put it, for infinity, and they're capable of doing that. Then he went on to say, once the money wells were pumping, each year, and this was his vision for what to do with the earnings, each year one half of the account's earnings would be dispersed among Alaska's residents, one half. And that's the genesis of the permanent fund dividend, right? I mean, we take 50% of the earnings calculated over a five-year period and disperse them to Alaska's residents. And then this is the key part. The other half, this is Hammond, the other half of the earnings could be used for essential government services, period. And so the concept was 50% for the people distributed to individual Alaska citizens of the earnings from the permanent fund, and 50% would go to government. We did the first. We created the money wells, right? We created the permanent fund. We did the second. We've done the PFD. We have never done the third.
Which is absolutely amazing to me.
Well, there's reasons for that that go back in history about why it wasn't done. And frankly, it's probably a good thing it wasn't done, because if that 50% had also flowed into the state treasury, the legislature would have spent that also.
Right. We'd be even more out of control.
We would be even more out of control. A portion of it over time has been reinvested back into the permanent fund, put back into the permanent fund corpus through something's called inflation proofing. We can get into that later in the conversation. It was important at the time, no longer relevant. Permanent Fund Corporation executive director said it's no longer relevant. The administration said it's no longer relevant. So a portion of it went back into the permanent fund over time. The other portion, the remaining portion of the 50%, stayed in the earnings reserve account. So when earnings come out of the permanent fund, they go into the earnings reserve account, and then 50% of those of the earnings go out to the permanent fund dividend, or sent off to the permanent fund division corporation, or permanent fund division of the Department of Revenue. A portion of it goes back, has gone back in as inflation proofing, and then the remainder of it has stayed in the earnings reserve.
And that's why we've built up what we've got.
Right. And we've now got $9
billion. $9 billion, okay.
Plus the three, that's 12.
I thought it was 12.
You're right about 12. We've got
Brad Keithley just said on the air that I was right.
First time for everything. All right.
So we have $9 billion that's sitting in the earnings reserve that, going back to Hammond, has always been intended to be used for essential government services when oil was no longer sufficient to do so. So that's what $9 billion sitting in the earnings reserve is. It isn't some, you know, concept of, oh, this is a pay forward for dividends or anything of the sort. It's just the leftover that hasn't been reinvested over time through inflation proofing. It's the leftover of the other 50% that
he intended
for government
services. Yep. And so that's a really – I know Tobin posted Brad's presentation on the Dave Steeren Facebook page. There's a great chart in there where you kind of show how that all works, how that's all broken down. I think people have so many misconceptions about all of this. They really don't understand the permanent fund. And I thought I had a decent one when you came and did the presentation just for the first time there. I learned a ton of stuff about that, you know. But that is such a critical thing now as we move forward, where 90% of the people are agreeing that in some way we should use money from the earnings reserve account to fund government. I don't know that they would say essential government services, just to fund government, which is another issue. But so people are agreeing to that, but the Alaskan public has to understand the permanent fund, and they don't. And so that's one of the things I'm very appreciative for, that you're doing that. They have to understand it.
It's actually very simple, and if anybody really wants to understand this issue, I can't recommend reading Diapering the Devil enough. It is a great collection of Jay's thoughts on this issue. And all you have to do is Google it. I mean, it's available online. You don't have to run to your nearest bookstore. There's an edition of it online that you can find.
I think it's so important that instead of having our staff Christmas dinner on Friday night, spending money on that, I'm just going to buy it for my staff. And
we can sit around the fire and read it. I think it's really important that the people listening understand that what you're talking about in no way affects the amount of the dividend.
Of the PFD. And on that thought, we're going to take a break, because we're up against a break. When we come back, we'll talk about that.
Okay, great.
The Dave Steeren Show. This is KFQD, Alaska's place to talk.
A division of the Anchorage School District, the Frontier Charter School, reminds you that if you were homeschooling your kids, they would or would not be on Christmas break right now. You see, you set the timetable. You set the calendar because you are enjoying a level of flexibility that no child in any other brick-and-mortar school can enjoy. You're the parent who can use your family's annual holiday trip as an educational opportunity. Whether you go somewhere, whether you stay here, whether you try different foods and traditions of others, the opportunity that you will enjoy as a homeschooling parent via the Frontier Charter School is second to none. Now you can go online at frontiercs.org and find out more. Achieving Academic Excellence for Homeschoolers, the Frontier Charter School.
I'm Anchorage attorney and real estate broker Kirk Wickersham. For the past 20 years, my company, FSBOsystem.com, has helped thousands of Alaska homeowners just like you successfully sell their home with no agent commission. We come out to your home to give you tips on show condition and renovations, guide you through all the legalities, list your home on the Alaska MLS and the best internet sites, provide your signs and other marketing materials, prepare your purchase and sale agreement, attend your closing, and much more. Last year, FSBOsystem.com clients sold in about 1 month and saved over $15,000.
Call FSBO System LLC today, 561-3726.
FSBOsystem.com, 561-FSBO.
Be a part of the largest wedding show in Alaska at the Dena'ina Center Sunday, January 22nd. Brides are given a chance to win big with Giamonti's Dig for Diamonds. And one lucky groom will walk away with a new TV when they relax in the Men's Warehouse Groom's Lounge. Booth space is available, but hurry, space is limited. Showcase what you have to offer and reserve your space today. For more information, email Crystal at events@alphamediausa.com. The Anchorage Wedding Fair is brought to you in part by Alaska Bride and Groom Magazine.
So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE.
So there you are. Your buddies are on the way over for the game, and you have no idea what to feed them. Don't panic. Just order Sicily's Tailgate Combo. It's perfect. It comes with a large two-topping pizza, 10 wings, and a 2-liter bottle of soda for only $19.95. That's a lot of food and drinks for less than $20. Now go call it in, 333-8000. Sicily's, the number one choice of tailgaters.
Every mom knows how hard it is to get the kids to eat a well-balanced diet. But with the all-you-can-eat buffet at Sicily's on Diamond, I can feed everyone. I don't have to cook. And let's be honest, it's hard to find something that the whole family loves. Not at Sicily's. With chicken, pasta, pizzas, and more, we eat like kings. Plus, this mom loves the fresh fruits and veggies. Tuesdays and Wednesdays, feed the kids for free. And take a break from cooking with Sicily's at 1201 East Diamond.
Just call Sicily's Pizza, 333-8000.
The Mark Leanne Van Camp Show.
She lost in the end. There's not one thing you can pin it on. It's almost like, in some ways, a football game. You know, you could look at the fumble at the end of the game, but you could also look in the first half when you got into the red zone twice and didn't come away with points. There are a number of things that go into it in the end. To point to one thing is just not accurate.
Markley and Van Camp, mornings at 11, only on FM News 103.7 KFQD. Dave Steering Show continues now, only on FM News 103.7 KFQD.
Rebecca doesn't know the bumper music because she is not familiar with Mumford & Sons.
I feel bad because, like, you and Brad both just got jumped up and got excited.
Well, I know, because they're a great band.
Tobin, you did that for me, didn't you?
Very good.
I remember
really
the
good.
One song you like.
Yeah, the one. Yeah, when I used to guest host, I wanted one music.
Is
all
that
the
right?
Time. Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
It was Marcus Mumford's Marcus Mumford's theme. So yeah, thank you.
I don't even know who Marcus Mumford is, as Renee said.
Mumford and Sons.
Okay.
They're a band.
After I read Diaper and the Devil,
huh? Ireland?
I'll listen to it.
No, they're English.
English. We'll see.
All right.
But they play banjo. They play bluegrass, basically, in banjo. So that's why I know them, at least.
Yeah.
So we're back, and I'm Rebecca Logan, and Renee Reeve is here with me. We work for the Alliance, and our guest is Brad Keithley, and he's talking about the 50-50 concept of Jay Hammond's about using a portion of earnings reserve account to pay for essential government services and still paying the PFD. Not touching the PFD, still paying the PFD.
Exactly.
Letting it go forward the way it was intended to.
Exactly. So the original concept, as I said, was we take money from oil, we put it into the permanent fund, we generate earnings off the permanent fund, 50% of that goes to the PFD, 50% of that goes to government. Nothing that I've talked about changes that 50%.
So I think
the original permanent fund going to the PFD.
So I think it's fair to say that when we get to Juneau, there are going to be two ideas that are put out about using an earnings reserve account. There's going to be this concept that you're talking about, and then there's going to be the concept that was SB 128 last year of restructuring the fund. So talk a little bit about how the two are different.
Yeah, the concept that was there last year, it's changing a little bit. The governor's changed it a little bit in the most recent proposal. But the concept that was there last year basically was to take the permanent fund dividend and move that, or a big chunk of the permanent fund dividend, move that out of the hands of Alaska citizens and move that over to government. It was basically, once you did the numbers, it was basically to go from a 50-50 split between government and individuals to an 80-20 split, government taking 80% and individuals getting 20%. And that deteriorated over time because the permanent fund has grown, the dividend, the earnings have grown, the dividends grown over time. Basically what the proposal was to sort of isolate it at $1,000 through various techniques.
Right.
And so as it grew from $2,000 to $2,250 to $2,500, the government would just take all the growth and citizens would continue to be stuck at about the $1,000 level. So it was converting it from 50-50 to 75-25 to 80-20, and then on down from there. That was their proposal. My proposal, Governor Hammond's proposal. It's not mine. Just goes back.
I'm going to call it the Brad Keithley proposal.
No. It's the Hammond plan. It's the Hammond 50-50 plan. We're just
right.
going. We're going back to the beginning, right?
Right.
What we've never done in this debate is we've never said, "Hey, let's go back to what Governor Hammond and the people who passed this originally intended, and see how that's played out." We've never done that. I mean,
right.
we've come up with all these plans in the meantime, but we've never gone back to the beginning, and that's what this plan does. So it keeps the permanent fund dividend going. And we were talking in the last segment about the $9 billion that's been accumulated
right.
over time.
It's in the account now.
Right. Now, that's one piece of it. But every year, it produces about $2.5 to $3 billion in earnings, right?
Right.
So going forward, half of that would go to the dividend. It would have been $1.4 billion this year if the governor hadn't cut it. And then the other half, $1.4 billion, because it's 50-50, right? $1.4 billion would go to pay essential government services. So it's not just a one-time deal. It's not just $9 billion
right.
that's sitting there that we can use. It is a continual stream of earnings that we can use, just like we get the continual stream off of oil. It's a continual stream of earnings that comes from the permanent fund earnings.
So I suppose if you were a person who... I do think these two concepts are going to dominate the conversation on this issue, right? And so I suppose if you were a person who supported the concept behind SB 128 and you were saying, like you did, that as it grew, government would be the recipient of the growth for government services. So that could be a negative because it's not going into the private sector, right? Which
mm-hmm.
I think most of us would rather see money in the hands of the private sector. Mm-hmm. But it could be a positive because then there would be – perhaps you would have less taxes on the private sector if that was happening. What do you – Let me just throw that out there.
Yeah. So some of the movement behind cutting the PFD has come from those who are concerned about income taxes, right?
Right.
They're viewing cutting the PFD as a way of avoiding income taxes, essentially, in all fairness, shifting the burden to the bulk of Alaskans as opposed to the higher income Alaskans paying for the cost of government. And that has been one of the motivations behind it. My view is we don't have to do either. I mean, if you look at Hammond's original, if you look at getting the cost of government down to long-term sustainable levels, which is about $4 billion,
right.
you look at oil revenues even currently, and oil revenues will climb as prices recover. You look at that, and then you look at this stream that we're getting off the earnings reserve. There's not that much left to close out of savings until oil prices recover. So
if you get to the $4 billion, this is a critical piece. If you get to the $4 billion,
if you get to the long-term sustainable level.
Right.
Yeah, if you try to continue to maintain government at
$5
billion, then you've still got a huge gap.
But
right?
We have no plan that will work if we continue to try to maintain.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah, we got to take everything. We've got to completely socialize everything. Just
yeah.
Take all income.
I mean, there's absolutely no way that we as a state can continue to move forward that way.
Right. But if we get, I mean, this is where Scott's original thesis or theory comes in, right? If we get government down to the size, the long-term sustainable level, then oil revenues plus the 50% that Jay originally intended go to meet essential government services, plus the other taxes, about $500 million in other taxes that we've already got.
Right.
We're not talking about creating any new taxes.
Right.
If we get government down, we're talking about a fairly narrow gap that we have to fund out of savings until oil prices recover.
Right. So the numbers I was putting together, presentation today for a Fairbanks speech I'm doing tomorrow. So $5 billion is the total right now for the budget, right? Operating capital and the permanent fund. And the revenue is about $4.1 billion. So the governor's budget is showing an $895 million gap.
Right.
And that's based on that number of being $5 billion.
Right. Right.
So hitting that sustainable number is a big deal.
It is. And hitting the sustainable number is not easy. I mean, we've got we can go down the track of talking about oil and gas tax credits, which
promised me you wouldn't even say that.
Well,
okay, you didn't really, but I actually think we will talk a little bit about that. Lynn had a question about it, so
okay,
all right. So go ahead, and then we're going to bring Don online.
No, that's okay. I was going to say it's getting down to that $4 billion is not easy. I mean, you can't snap your fingers and do it. You've got to confront some hard issues.
Oh, my gosh. It takes a lot of work.
You've got to confront oil and gas tax credits. You've got to confront the university. We've built a university system we cannot afford. You've got to confront the fact we've got, you know, the Cadillac Medicaid system in the nation.
Yep.
We've adopted more Medicaid optional services than any other place. You've got to confront those issues. But we've got to confront those issues to get the
absolutely.
And they need to be systematic changes. Not, I mean, that's what we talk about,
right?
People cutting the budget, cutting the money so that people hurt and then people revolt, which is what people love to do,
right?
Isn't helping us.
No.
Okay, Don's been holding on air, so let's bring him on. Don, you had a question about the sustainable budget plan?
Well, my question was, because I don't know a whole lot about it, was a five-year income average in Hammond's plan, or did the state come up with that later?
Good question.
I'll hang up.
Okay, thanks for the call and the question, Don. Thank you.
Good question. Hammond's original vision was just 50-50. When they enacted the statute in the early 1980s that codifies the dividend, they used the five-year average because they were concerned about it spiking some years and going down the next year if earnings went way down, potentially not having the cash to be able to pay it. So they wanted to smooth it over time.
Okay, so we're in about 45 seconds before a hard break, and when we come back, I want to switch topics a little bit. But you're happy to give presentations to groups about this, right?
Absolutely.
They can go to your Thoughts on Alaska Oil and Gas or your Sustainable Budget page to reach out to you. And the presentation that you gave to us is online now on Dave Stern's Facebook page and on the Alliance Facebook page.
And on my blog. So it's,
oh, yeah, and your blog. We don't promote other people's blogs here. I'm just going to say that. It's like we just don't do
it. Probably been on Headlamp at
some
point, right?
It probably has been on Headlamp at some point, but I encourage people to look at that because I do believe those will be the two driving plans for the permanent fund, and people should be very educated on that. So we'll come back after the news and change topics.
I keep a close watch on
97.50. And now, here's Dave Stearin.
Actually, here's Rebecca Logan and Renee Reed from the Alliance and our guest Brad Keithley. And we were just talking in the last segment about what Brad's been talking about a lot is Jay Hammond's original vision for the permanent fund. So let's kind of close with, we are at the break talking about why he had that vision.
Yep. So Alaska is unique among the U.S. producing states in this sense. individuals, private individuals, can't own the minerals. They can't own the minerals in the ground. In Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana, Arkansas, Kansas, I can just go through all the producing states. Individuals own the minerals in the ground. And so when there's production, they receive revenue. Those individuals receive revenue, and they put that revenue into the private economy of those states, right? They spend, they do various things. And money from oil is then going into the private economy. In Alaska, individuals don't own the mineral estate. Under the Statehood Act, under the Federal Statehood Act, it was all transferred to the state, and there's a provision in the Statehood Act that says if the state ever tried to sell it or alienate it to individuals, it would revert back to the federal government.
Wow.
The state couldn't do that. It would go back to the federal government.
Bad plan.
Right.
So we can't create the same sort of private wealth generation out of oil that you have in the other producing states. This guy was brilliant. Hammond said, there's a way to do that. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take a portion of the revenues, of these mineral revenues, and distribute it to Alaska citizens who are essentially tenants in common.
Right.
Common owners of the minerals, the state's mineral estate. And those individuals then will replicate the private expenditures, the investments in the private economy that go on in Oklahoma, Texas, and Louisiana and other states. So it creates a system in which Alaska is a lot more like those states because we have mineral wealth coming into the private economy, into individuals' hands, and into the private economy. If we didn't do that, Alaska would be a lot more like Angola or Azerbaijan,
right,
or any other country where all of the mineral wealth goes into the hands of government, and government decides who gets it. Jay said, no, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to do this 50-50 plan. 50% is going to go into the hands of individuals. They'll decide where the money goes. And that's created a private economy in Alaska that looks a lot more like Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana, Arkansas than we would if we didn't do that. We would look a lot more like Azerbaijan and Angola if we didn't do that.
So a lot of foresight.
A lot of foresight.
That's one of the questions I asked you originally when I first heard about this. So why do we care about Jay Hammond's plan? And your response was because it was a great idea.
Yeah.
And he did have the foresight, and he was really smart about thinking about this in the future.
Hammond understood Alaska in a way that to some degree we've lost. I mean, Hammond lived out in the bush. He lived in the private economy. He understood the bush economy. He understood the urban economy. He had a feel for how Alaska operated, frankly, in a way that I'm not sure we've got many people these days understand it. And so he thought through these things about how to create a private economy in a state where in a situation where the state owns everything. How do you do that? How do you replicate what goes on in the other producing states? And there were advisors, certainly. Milton Friedman was part of it. Clementillion was around.
Yeah.
There were advisors, certainly, but Hammond had the vision to bring that all together.
Pretty smart. So we're going to move on to a different topic, but I want to remind people that if they have questions, they can call in
522-0750.
It's right here on the wall. I was having a mind blank. And 888-99-9750 if you're not in state. So let's go to Lynn's question. He called in earlier, and he wanted to ask you your thoughts about what do we do about declining production.
Yeah, so declining production's interesting. SB 31, yes, we're going to have declining production. It's really a question of how fast it declines, right? So if it declines at 2%, 3% a year, and oil prices recover, we still get added revenues if it's on that soft a decline curve. The problem comes if the decline curve is 5%, 6%, then price recovery can't offset that, and we go into the plunging situation.
Right.
The Walker administration, in its fall revenue sources book, predicts a fairly steep decline. Of 5%, 6% going on over an extended period of time, which leads to the problem that Lynn's talked about. But when you look at the activity that was generated by SB 21,
right,
when you look at, you know, the experience we had last year where we had increased production, when you look at what we've had with TAPS this year where we've had increased production
for the first time since 2002,
right, you're going these 5% declines, they're just not making sense.
Right.
And so it's led me to go back in and start thinking about the process that the Division of Oil and Gas is going through that's coming up with these lower numbers. My response to Lynn's question is I don't believe the 5-6% decline rate. I think the decline rates are going to be a lot softer than that. If they're a lot softer, price recovery will stabilize and give us something of a bump in the revenue side.
Well, and so, you know, just as much as I believe the permanent fund question is going to be those two issues, right? You know, when we start talking about a sustainable budget number and new revenue, First of all, I don't think probably enough people down in Juneau are talking about an actually sustainable budget number. They've gone straight to new revenue, right? And so the pros and cons of that, just showing that forecast with such a significant decrease, so that I guess the positive part of that, as I was saying in the break, is that we want our state government officials to be conservative, right, in making their predictions on what they're going to base their spending on. The problem is they're not talking about that in relation to spending, right? They're using that. The steep decline is now is what people will use. I'm not going to say the Division of Oil and Gas is using that because I don't think they are. Legislators will use that to justify new revenue instead of looking at a reduction in the budget.
We've had this problem. We had this problem in the Spring Revenue Sources book,
right,
also. And what happened in the Spring Revenue Sources book was they really used very low oil prices.
Uh-huh.
They had higher production levels, but they used very low oil prices to drive down revenues, and that led people to say, okay, well, we got to cut the PFD, or we got to have taxes,
yep,
or we got to do something to close this gap because oil revenues are going to be so low. What we need are realistic forecasts. I mean, you can be way too conservative. You can be so conservative and say, well, let's just use $35 oil forever, right? Well, then you're going to say, well, we've got this huge funding gap,
right,
and now we're going to have to do PFD cuts, and we're going to have to do other things to close it. We need to be realistic. The administration became more realistic on the current oil price in the Fall Revenue Sources book.
Right.
They sort of couldn't avoid it because the oil markets were telling you the price was much higher than they had forecast in the Spring Revenue Sources book. But frankly, when you go out 10 years, they're doing it again. The Energy Information Administration,
right,
the Federal Energy Information Administration.
Read their stuff every day.
Nonpartisan.
Right, nonpartisan.
Actually, I do.
Yes.
Nonpartisan Energy Information Administration forecast prices that go out to 2040. The out years may get a little spacey, but the next 10 years, next 15 years are pretty solid. And when you look at those price levels, nonpartisan, no political agenda driving them, and then you look at the administration's forecast, 10 years out, the administration's forecasting oil prices that are only 80% of the EIA's forecast. So the administration, once again, is driving down long-term revenues by using below market, below reasonable estimates of oil prices. And then they say, well, we got this deficit coming, so we need to cut the PFD and we need to increase taxes. Same thing now on the production side. So we need the legislature really needs to come in and look at the oil prices and look at nonpartisan sources,
right,
somebody that's not trying to drive,
right,
an agenda. And frankly, they're going to need to do the same thing, I think, with the production numbers, because the production numbers, I think, are driving things.
We're going to continue this discussion because it's important. We're going to go to a break. Peter, stay on hold, and we'll take your question after the break.
His voice is your voice. You're listening to Dave Steering, 103.7 FM, KFQD.
Ladies, are you struggling with intimacy due to pain, dryness, or lack of arousal? These conditions affect the majority of menopausal women and breast cancer patients. At Denali OBGYN Clinic, they know it's something you don't want to talk about. Yet they have a non-hormonal solution available. The revolutionary new Mona Lisa Touch is a painless laser treatment that is performed in office with absolutely no downtime or side effects. This treatment provides immediate results with long-lasting relief. It's okay to talk about it. Visit DenaliOBGYN.com.
I thought I was fine, but I was surprised to hear I had high blood pressure. Now I've got it under control.
I still feel young, so I didn't think I needed cancer screenings. I'm just glad we caught it early.
I feel great, but my doctor said my blood sugar put me at risk for diabetes. Now I'm watching what I eat and getting regular exercise.
You can look fine and feel fine and still have health issues that need attention. Make an appointment for a yearly checkup.
This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services, aired by the Alaska Broadcasters Association and this station.
Rant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you, 844-91-BIBLE. That's 844-91-BIBLE.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I still have nightmares.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Clark Howard. This is Clark Howard.
There's a tremendous disconnect between what our kids are doing online and on their phones and what we think they're doing as their parents. And I recommend that you require, not ask, you require access to the social media in particular that your son or daughter is involved in. You as a parent need to know what's up so you can provide proper guidance and support.
Clark Howard, weeknights at 7 on KFQD.
Don't spend another day in a small home with a big to-do list. Call Spinell Homes today and start building your dream home. 344-5678.
Spinell Homes, making a difference in your life.
Haven't had any new calls to my tip line about any new accidents or disabled vehicles, but APD is still working on the accident on eastbound Tudor right at the off-ramp from the Seward Highway, and it might be a good idea to continue to avoid that area if you can. I saw a lot of backups on my Borealis broadband traffic cameras, so be aware of that as you're making your way around town. My tip line is open at 222-0526 if something else gets in your way. I'm Colleen Bailey with Time Saver Traffic.
The Dave Steering Show continues now, only on FM News 103.7 KFQD.
All right, we're back. We have so much that we've covered. You could talk about this endlessly. I want to get Don's question on the air because he's been holding. I mean, Peter, how are you?
I'm fine.
So you had a question about the Hammond Plan and federal taxes?
Yeah, I wonder if anybody thought about at the time how much of this permanent fund dividend that was being passed out to us was actually being shoveled towards the federal government. I mean, whatever tax bracket you're in, that percentage of your dividend goes to the federal government, and that amount of money is not sitting here in our economy turning something. It's gone.
Brad,
that's one of the downfalls of the dividend, is that portion of the dividend is not here, not doing anything here. It's being shoveled towards the federal government.
Brad, thoughts on that?
Yeah, so ICER did an analysis early last year where they looked at that very question. It was about 13%, if I recall off the top of my head, of the overall dividend that was going to the federal government in federal income taxes. Turns out that's the lowest percentage of dollars that immediately go outside of all the various options. Income taxes, more dollars go immediately outside because of the people who aren't Alaskans who are earning income. And various other things. So it was not insignificant, but it didn't make the dividend a worse option than anything else.
So we were talking about production forecasts when we went to the break, and I don't know if we mentioned or not that the new director of the Division of Oil and Gas is someone named Chantel Walsh, who we all know actually, yeah. And have a great respect for. So she's kind of stepped into that role now of where she's inherited that forecast and gets to deal, I think, work through some of the things that you're bringing up. And I'm confident that she is a person, Renee, and I have a great
Absolutely.
Respect for her, who will be a good person to work with the legislators to kind of walk through all of that. Look at whatever their modeling is, if there are any issues, and do that. She's a really great person.
And she's extremely intelligent.
Oh, yeah. We're big fans of her. So we've got Representative Millette on the line holding to talk. But just to kind of close this out on the production forecasts, if the legislators were going to look at a third party, who would you suggest that they go to for that, to look at realistic forecasts?
Well, I wasn't upset with the old system. The old system
right.
used a private contractor, went out and talked to the companies on a private basis, a confidential basis, collected information that, frankly, you don't find in the public in the public sector, public format, and sort of put together an overview by having these conversations with the companies. One of the limitations, I think, that the administration's operating on is that they're only using public information. And so you're not getting the private understandings,
right,
and the private plans or the confidential plans of the companies factored in this. And if you look at the public information, you got a decline curve, right?
Right.
I mean, if you don't do anything to wells, wells go on a decline curve. So you
right.
got a decline curve. What you don't get by not having the conversations with the companies are the offsets that the companies are planning on. Well workovers,
right.
Redrilling,
right.
Fracking, additional steps that soften that decline curve out. And so if I were the legislature, I'd say, let's go back to the old system. $200,000, I understand you're trying to cut it. But having information that doesn't do us any good on the revenue side is not the solution. We need to find a way to get the advantage of the additional conversations that we've had in the past.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
You
know we're going to have a gazillion more conversations over the next 6 months on this issue, because these are the issues that are going to drive the conversation.
Well, thank you for having me on. Thanks for the people who were listening and the questions they had. And again, if you want to look at, you know, sort of this all laid out, it's on the Alliance's blog.
Right.
It's on the Dave Steering Show Facebook page. And it's on my website. So.
And it's well worth looking
it
over.
It is. It absolutely is.
And actually, for a PowerPoint, you can follow it
right
quite well. Sometimes it's harder to follow PowerPoints when someone's not there presenting it to you. Yours is not like that.
All right.
So.
Well, thanks.
All right. Thanks, Brad. Okay. Now we're going